The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome again, listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, the Eugene Zamperone, naturopathic physician, professor at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, and herbalist and host for this edition of the program here. And we have a really exciting guest and program today. Today's topic is going to be Tibetan wisdom for disease prevention and longevity. You know, Tibetan medicine is an ancient healing system whose origin is not really well known. On the surface, it could be simply an amalgamation or offshoot of Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, but in looking at it carefully, like our guests will today help us to study and realize its distinct theories and its therapeutic practices, which are separate and distinct from traditional medicines that we have grown accustomed to, sort of like Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. And with me is my illustrious friend, co-host, and colleague, Dr. Norm Suhu. Dr. Suhu is a naturopathic physician and acupuncturist with two successful practices in Manhattan and Glen Cove, Long Island, New York. He has extensive training in classical homeopathy, classical acupuncture, biosyntony, and he studied under numerous masters of the healing arts. And, of course, one of them was Dr. Ridak Dawa, the former professor of Tibetan herbs and clinical massage from the Tibetan Medical College. He is an adopted son of the Dalai Lama's former, now deceased, personal physician. Dr. Suhu, are you there?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Z.
Hey, it's great to hear from you, Norm. And,
yes.
Wonderful to have you on the program today, listening right here on Progressive Radio Network. So tell us a little bit about your background, Dr. Suhu, briefly, and then let's talk about the Tibetan medicine. You know, we hear about it because of the Tibetan goji berries, or I don't even know if I said it right, but that's the Americanized version, which is actually, you know, grows in the colder climates of China and Tibet, but there's a lot of different literature and research which supports Tibetan medicine becoming sort of like the next wave, the next new holistic and indigenous medical system in the country.
It certainly is. It's a very old medicine with lots of wisdom. The beauty of this medicine is it fits right into our naturopathic philosophy, which is to find out the cause of disease and to eliminate that, and thereby freeing your body's ability to heal itself. And this is through lifestyle changes and also behavior, certain ways of thinking. As you mentioned in the intro, the basic cause of disease, they have a very interesting theory on this. They actually believe that someone is born with a certain constitution type. They call it lung, tripa, or pekin. And the lung type is susceptible to gas, wind disorders, nervous system disorders, things of that nature. And they say that this person is born with too much desire from past life. Very interesting. So in other words, too much desire, too much want is like, I want this, I want that, you know, and that can throw off the nervous system. So that's what this person in this lifetime has to watch out for.
Fascinating. What about the other constitutions?
The other constitution is tripa. Tripa is the body type that is susceptible to anger, migraine headaches, all sorts of headaches, acid reflux, things of heat. Too much heat, skin trouble, itches, rashes, and the mental disposition of this person that they have to work on this lifetime is too much aggression or anger or hatred. they could be very impatient. Okay?
Yeah.
So they call that aggression. And the third constitution type is the Pekin type. That type of person is susceptible to phlegm, excessive phlegm, mucus trouble, excessive weight gain, and joint trouble. And this person needs to work in this lifetime on being open-minded and more educated. They would say that this person is susceptible to being ignorant and lazy. That's what they would say.
And I think also attachment, very, very attached to things, whether they're, you know, spiritual things, emotional things, physical things,
mm-hmm.
possessions,
mm-hmm.
or inertia, like they don't like change.
Yeah, so that's correct.
So what happens, like we're born with a certain constitution, and that's very interesting because even, you know, Galen and Hippocrates talked about the four humors, and of course other types of medicine, like Ayurveda talks about, you know, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and Chinese medicine has various typologies. The typologies are pretty well known amongst the ancient system medicine, and I think only Western medicine really doesn't have a classic typology where they actually look at the person who has the disease versus the disease the patient has. Can you comment on that concept?
Yes, that's right. I mean, a patient can present with arthritis, but the treatment is very different depending on what constitution they have. Because that will tell you if this is a rung person, then that means that the wind is disturbed in the body, so the treatment would be different. If it's a tripa type of arthritis, that means there's too much heat. And with Pekin, there would be too much swelling in the joints, for example. So you would give different type of herbs. And, of course, depending on your constitution, you would have to prescribe a different type of diet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all in keeping with not just treatment, but with longevity, which I'm sure everyone has a very strong interest in.
At some point in the program, I want you to definitely comment on the sort of the Tibetan practices for longevity, because I know they're very fascinating. But let's talk a little bit about let's talk about diet and maybe lifestyle, starting these types of things, because you know these behaviors that maybe you have a predilection for. It's a lot harder to change these behaviors when they're so ingrained. So how does the Tibetan physician counsel their patients so that they can change these behaviors to a positive one?
Well, the main tool that's used in Tibetan wisdom is meditation. You know, the culture is Tibetan Buddhism, and this religion is seen everywhere. I mean, it's in the medicine, it's in the way that you live. And, of course, you try to improve your life, your behavior, your attitude. You want to become more Buddha-like in your life and to learn more. And the most basic way to do that is through meditation and proper behavior.
So that would actually be part of your prescription, actually, the doctor would prescribe meditation practices depending upon your constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Would some of the meditation practices be combined with like movement practices? Say you're the last constitution, the kind of the earth, the heavy constitution. They like to sit around. They probably wouldn't have any trouble sitting there meditating. They don't like to move too much, right, Norm? As far as I remember, there can be some motions associated with the meditations and things
like
that.
Yes, they have their own system, too, of yoga, if you want to call it that, certain postures and exercises. There are books you can read up on this. There is one book, I believe it's called Tibetan Ayurveda. That's one of the books I've seen that has those postures that you can perform. It's very simple and it's very useful. Otherwise, you'd have to, of course, see a Tibetan physician.
Right.
And you can get taught those things. But movement is definitely important. The diet, of course.
Tell us about it, we come from a culture where diets become faddish. It's okay to eat meat, according to some people, and then other people, abhor meat, and there's kind of people that in between, there's eating according to your constitution, carbohydrates, avoiding them, first they're good, first then they're bad. So Americans are, I would say, in a very confused state in this time. I've seen more patients just scratching their head, not really knowing what the heck they need to do. And I like these traditional systems because your constitution really is pretty much the same. This is the way you were born. So really, this is something that's more of a lifestyle approach to eating versus the fad, who puts out the best book or the fad of the month. Would you agree with that?
That's right. See, your constitution stays the same throughout your life. So you basically should follow and avoid certain foods that would aggravate your particular constitution. That's first of all. And then there are also phases in life where certain humors are more active. So then you want to avoid certain foods at those time periods to avoid aggravation. For example, in the childhood, from baby infancy on to childhood, you would be more peckin', which means you have more of a tendency to have phlegm and mucus disorders. Just look at a baby, for example. This is the perfect example of peckin'. You just eat and sleep. That's it.
They're constantly drooling.
Yes, that's right. And that's actually how you gain weight. You eat and then you sleep.
Uh-huh.
That's actually a treatment. If you have a wasting disorder and you need to gain weight, they even suggest that you take a 10-minute nap after you eat in a recliner. This will help build pekin, in the Tibetan system.
Huh.
So the early childhood until late teens would be a pekin stage. After that, you would go into a tripa phase where there's more heat, more activity. You're trying to rise up in life, and you're pushing forward and competing. So in these times, you would be more susceptible to excessive heat disorders and impatience and anguish. So you need to watch out for excessive spices, excessive alcohol consumption, things of that nature during that.
Huh.
And then in the later time in your life, maybe late 50s onward, you would be more rung type. You would be more susceptible to rung disorders. So you have to be careful not to eat excessive cold things, such as salads, cold water, avoid air conditioning, raw cucumbers, raw tomatoes, things that would be cooling for the body. Even green tea, you should avoid it during those later years because that increases the wind humor. I know that's something very confusing because it's being taught that green tea is excellent for you. It has theanine and all the flavonoids, which is fine, but you have to consider, is this person a rung type? And if they are in a rung period in their life, you don't want them to have excessive amounts of green tea.
Wow.
If they do have green tea, then you would have to temper it. You could put a little bit of raw honey in there to change the quality so it doesn't aggravate the rung.
So you could change the quality of food based on the preparation and other spices or things added to that.
Precisely. For example, it is okay to have a salad if you have a little bit of warm water afterwards.
Mm.
Or have a little ginger tea with some raw honey in it. That would change the quality so you can digest it better. That's just one simple example. Actually, that's a very good remedy for all the body types, ginger honey tea.
So it seems to go, no matter what your constitution is, ginger honey tea seems to cross those barriers then.
Yes, because it enhances digestive fire and thereby helping you absorbing more food and preventing you from catching cold in your body.
Why is the digestion so important in these ancient systems of medicine. You know, in our culture, it's very important. I think digestive over-the-counter remedies are the number one sort of medicine sought after by consumers, whether it's OTC or prescription. And so clearly there's people with a lot of digestive orders, Dr. Suhu, but I know these other medicines pay very special attention to getting the digestive system really, really in top shape. Can you talk about the digestive system and how critical it is?
See, the digestive system is so essential in these ancient systems because the food you eat, you know, the way we look at it in conventional nutrition is when you eat, you're breaking down the food into carbohydrates, into simple sugars, your proteins are broken down into amino acids and fats and so on. And then these are raw materials are building blocks for various body parts. But in these ancient systems, they have specific timelines and sequences of understanding when a certain body substance is created. And this is very important. So let me just tell you, when you eat something, the food by the next day is considered to have already turned into blood. By the third day, it has turned into muscle. It takes 4 days to create fat. By the fifth day, it turns into bone. By the sixth day, it turns into bone marrow. And by the seventh day, it turns into sperm or female reproductive hormone substances and essences. This is very, very important, okay? Because if you know how many days it takes for that substance to be created, you have to be very cautious about how you live your life. For example, sex. Because it takes 7 days to produce the sperm, you don't want to have sex very frequently. And that varies with the season, okay? Mm-hmm. In the winter, it's cold outside, so what happens is the pores on the skin close up. And there's a natural tendency for the body to try to conserve heat. So since the body is warming and trying to conserve energy, you can have sex more frequently than once a week without worrying about losing energy. Now, in the summertime, when the pores are naturally open because you're trying to cool the body because it's so hot outside, that would be very detrimental for you to have sex more than once every 15 days because the pores are open. If you have sex, you're going to lose even more energy. Now, the problem with it is this. If you eat and it takes 7 days to make the sperm and you're having sex much more frequently, what happens is you're going to start drawing the nutrients from bone and bone marrow and up the line. So then if you have sex more frequently, you'll eventually get prone to arthritis or bone disorders, things of that nature, or accelerated aging.
That's incredible. That's really a very unique system there, looking at things, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, we can help this along too, because there are certain foods that, because of their energetic quality, become sperm the next day. It doesn't take 7 days. Certain foods, if you consume them, by the next day they'll turn into sperm or reproductive system essence.
I'm sure many of the men out there just can't wait for you to tell them that.
Well, one of them is goji berry.
Wow, interesting.
It has that quality.
And even in Chinese medicine, it's been one of those great anti-aging and kidney and other builders, so that's kind of interesting. But the goji has that quality.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It bypasses the 7-day production cycle. By the next day, you have sperm. So another thing that does that is ginseng. Everyone knows ginseng, right?
One question, though. Why is, like... does the body have a pecking order and the body feels that sperm is like, or the reproductive chi is the most important thing because that's what kind of keeps the humanity going? Is there kind of like a pecking order as far as the energetics and the quality and the...
That is considered the most pure substance.
Okay.
Because in the digestive process, you're continuously refining and separating the pure from the impure. So by the time you've reached the sperm, that's the most pure essence, the most vital substance, and that's what feeds the aura, according to them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what gives you a nice glow. So if someone doesn't have a nice glow in their aura, you can tell there must be something wrong with their digestive system.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So it's beyond just nutrients. It's these vital...
Vital essences that are extracted from the chi of the food.
What builds muscle? You know, because as people age, their muscle and bone mass go down. I know that sarcopenia, they call it, is one of the leading cause of people falling, and then they break their bones. But if they didn't have the muscle, when the muscles are wasting...
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose their balance more frequently and then fall. And I'm dealing with a lot of geriatric patients in the practice recently. So tell us a little bit about what keeps the muscles strong.
Well, wasting is basically rung. There's too much rung usually in this society.
So that would be the wind. That would be the wind.
That's wind, and that's from stress.
And that's, by the way, spelled R-L-O-N-G, if people are taking notes out there.
Yes.
Rung. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's different ways to spell it, but you know that's how you would pronounce it. In this society, rung is the big killer.
Okay.
Stress.
So is that because we live in a society where we are just constantly on the go with sort of blackberries and we have constant bombardment with electromagnetic and we're constantly going, and now we have instant message. In the old days we had just regular mail. Now we have email and we feel like we have to get back to our email. We're plugged in. The society is plugged in. Do you think that throws the rung out?
That is a huge problem. Huge. Hmm. The rung, if it gets imbalanced, you're affecting the nervous system, okay? And anything that affects the nervous system is going to burn up things more and not allow things to move properly, so to speak. They say that rung is the cause of thousands of diseases, okay? For example, if you have a fire, you need air. You need to fan it to make it, burn.
Right.
If there's too much fire or too much wind, from too much wind, it gets out of control. Likewise, if there's no wind, no air coming through, then the fire is going to die down. So the wind is the most important thing to watch out for. That's why, like I say, rung is most associated with wasting or even things like ADD.
Yeah, sort of all the many of the mental emotional conditions that we see in society today.
It's a big problem. And dietarily, the things that you would want to avoid to calm down rung, like I mentioned to you, is excessive green tea consumption would be one of them.
Wow.
Okay. The other thing would be pork. Amongst all the meats, pork would aggravate that humor the most. And then there is goat. Not many people eat goat, but as you very well know, in the islands they eat goat.
The West Indies, sure.
Yes, the West Indies. So goat is something that would increase that humor as well and could very aggravate it. And it goes for the dairy product that comes from it, such as goat milk, goat yogurt, goat cheese.
Mm.
Okay? You would want to avoid these things, otherwise it might aggravate rung. In terms of the vegetables, you want to limit the amount of salad you would consume and raw food. And amongst those, especially tomato, cucumber, peppers, basically things that have lots of liquid in them can increase rung.
Mm.
Big juicy vegetables, you know, like tomatoes, cucumbers, watermelon, okay? So you would want to limit those in your diet. Now, you could, like I said, you could basically counter that by eating foods that are prepared a certain way. Like you can cook those vegetables and you'd be okay. Or you can drink ginger honey tea before or after your meal. If you don't have access to that, you can take a warm glass of water and add half a pinch of sea salt in it and drink it after your salad. That will help offset that. Now, the reason behind that is they say it's like cooking. Your stomach is a big pot. So from your background, you know when you're cooking pasta, right, you add a little salt to the water so that it cooks it more quickly and thoroughly. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. After you eat your lettuce and your salad, you can have a small glass of water with half a pinch of sea salt in it. That'll help you digest those raw vegetables easier so it doesn't aggravate that humor.
Salt enhances that.
Yes, the salt. Just a half a pinch of sea salt in some warm water. And it'll just help the stomach cook things better, so to speak.
Let me just reintroduce you, Dr. Suhu. We're talking with Dr. Suhu, if you're just joining us on Progressive Radio Network. And Dr. Suhu is a naturopathic physician, acupuncturist. He has practices in Manhattan and Glen Cove, Long Island, New York. He has extensive training in classical homeopathy, acupuncture, biosyntony, and he studied under many masters of the healing arts. And today we're studying Tibetan medicine, which is something that we don't generally hear, even on a lot of the holistic radio circuits and whatnot. Tibetan medicine is still considered something that is not very quote-unquote mainstream, yet it seems like they have a fabulous healing system, and I'm learning quite a bit listening to you. I'm sure the listeners are really enjoying the program, and thanks for joining us, Norm.
Thank you, Dr. Z.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about, besides the diet, unless you wanted to finish up a couple more concepts in that, because I wanted to talk a little bit about physical medicine in the Tibetan system is very interesting.
Yes, but let me just finish one thought, because you mentioned about the wasting disorder, you know, with the muscles.
Yes.
I'm sure everyone will be interested in this as well. There's a very simple method. If you want to gain weight, maintain your weight, or lose weight, okay? It's very, very simple. It involves when to consume liquids in relationship to eating.
Okay.
Okay? If you want to lose weight, let's say you have excessive pecking, okay? You want to lose weight. The best thing to do is to drink liquids before you eat. Don't drink anything during or after. Okay?
Okay, that makes sense.
And if preferred, it should be, again, ginger honey tea. Okay. That'll help lose even more weight. If you just want to remain the same weight, not gain or lose, you basically should sip some liquid during your meal. Don't have anything before or after you eat.
You know what, Dr. Suhu, I hear the music, which means we need to take a quick break. I wasn't sure we were going to do that or not. So let's get some ginger honey tea, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Listen to Of Consuming Interest every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., chairman of the Board of Citizens for Health. Every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, we discuss a topic of consuming interest, often about health, but also about politics, commerce, and whatever the current topic of the day might be. Of Consuming Interest, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
The Progressive Radio Network is the home for progressive minds. It's the place where progressives get together to discuss important topics with informed opinions, minus the agenda. PRN is the place for fresh, stimulating, commercial-free radio content from leading progressives all over the world every day. The Progressive Radio Network, making the world a more informed place, one mind at a time.
Do you have a medical question or concern and would like to get a second opinion? If so, make sure you tune in to Second Opinion with Dr. Ronald Klatz. Dr. Klatz is president and founder of the AFREM, American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, the largest physician-based anti-aging organization in the world. Each week, Dr. Klatz will talk with expert guests from the field of anti-aging, functional, and regenerative medicine. So if you want to live a longer, healthier life, tune in to Second Opinion with Dr. Klatz, Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, here on PRN.
Hi, progressives. This is Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front. I hope you've been enjoying the news I'm bringing you hot off the press, so to speak, like behind-the-scenes stories and insider scoop from Al Gore's recent climate conference. I know the Greenistas and love introducing the most informative and inspiring experts on the Green Front every week. So join me as we learn more about our environment and what we can do to turn it around.
The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, every Wednesday at 2 on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And welcome back, folks, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we took a little break there, but now we're going to get back to talking about Tibetan medicine with Dr. Norman Suhu. And Dr. Suhu, we were talking about some interesting stuff about either gaining, maintaining, or losing weight. Can you continue on with your thread of thought there?
Okay, thank you. Like I said before, let me just reiterate.
Sure.
If you want to lose weight, you want to drink liquids before you eat. Don't drink anything while you eat, and definitely don't drink anything after you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And preferably, if you can drink ginger honey tea, that'll help even more. So that would be good for a Pekin type.
Right.
Someone who has excessive weight and arthritis because of the excessive load on the joints. Now, if you want to just stay the same weight, not gain or lose, you would want to drink liquids while you eat. Just a little bit of liquid. Have a little solid and then have a little sip. Have a little solid food, have a little sip, and so on. If you want to gain weight, which is very well could be some of these people that you mentioned before with a muscle mass loss, you basically want to drink liquids after you eat. Nothing before, nothing during. And again, you can use ginger honey tea.
Wow, that's fascinating. That's amazing that the Tibetan doctors have, observed this phenomenon.
It's so simple. It's unbelievably simple, but it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Unbelievable. Now, getting back to the food also, they have another thing. They say you should take your stomach and divide it into four parts. And when you're eating, you basically should leave one quarter of that space air. Another quarter of that space should be filled with liquid. And two quarters of that space should be filled with solid. Now, for the everyone, of course, has a different size stomach. So they roughly say, take two handfuls. Imagine two hands cupped together. Okay?
Yeah.
That would make up two quarters of the amount of solid.
So basically, that's how much you should eat. Now, is that per meal or per day?
Per meal.
Per meal.
Yeah.
So you
not
sort of would hold your
that.
Hands together, and that you could visualize by putting your two hands together. That would be in Tibetan medicine. The proper amount of food to consume per meal.
Yes.
I see.
Not to exceed that. You could eat less than that, but don't exceed that.
Don't exceed it, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's roughly that much, because you don't want the stomach to stretch out. If you eat too much, it's a big digestive strain on the system. It's all about digestion, because the food has to turn into, again, like I said, blood, muscle, fat, bone marrow, and then sperm.
Now, does food turn into toxins in the Tibetan medicine system? Like I know in Ayurveda, if you're not, and Chinese actually, if you're not digesting it, it actually becomes toxic substances.
Yeah, they call it pekin, mucus. You get more mucus.
So that's like the ama. Now, define mucus, because people think, well, maybe it would just be more mucus in the sinus, but mucus can pervade the entire body, according to these ancient theories.
Yes, it's a sticky substance.
So elevated cholesterol associated with atherosclerosis could be construed as perhaps some type of pekin or toxic.
Absolutely. Cholesterol, they would say that is because the liver is not working well because of the digestion.
Okay.
Yeah, they would call it that, cholesterol, and that would affect circulation. Yeah. And liver also separates, you know, pure from impure. That organ is very important. It goes, food goes into the stomach and then the small intestine, and then it separates into pure and impure. The impure goes to the urine. The pure goes further into the liver. And then the liver will separate that into pure and impure. The pure stuff will go on to make flesh, like I said, fat, and eventually bone marrow, and sperm. The impure will go to the gallbladder, which gets further subdivided into pure or impure. And that is important for skin health. So if you have any skin problem, they usually say it's because there's too much bile in your system.
The biliary system. Now, would they use similar plants and herbs that we know about being both trained as naturopathic doctors? I don't know if those things grow in Tibet. Things like dandelion and the thistles and some of these well-known liver purification plants. What would they do to purify the liver?
They have compound patent formulas for that.
Okay.
And I'm still in the process of learning that. It's a very extensive materia medica. As you can imagine, the climate there is very different. So you definitely don't have the same plants as you would in the West Indies, for example.
Right. Sure.
You know, and the goji berry. To get the best quality goji berry, you really do need to get them from the Himalayas, because they have the energetic quality. The ones that are farmed in China, in the farms, they're cultivated. They're not as potent. When you taste it, you can taste the difference with the wild-crafted stuff from the mountains and Himalaya.
I'm sure. I mean, it's, these many ecosystems play a huge role in that. And that's one of the problems with even people using herbal medicine. And I was involved in a study where we were trying to grow many of the Chinese herbs down here in Bridgeport and in the medicinal herb garden, and although they grew and they seemed robust, when we sent them back to the lab for analysis, they really didn't have as many of the parent compounds than they would have in their native origin.
Mm-hmm.
If they if they don't have the parent compounds, they can't be as medicinal as, of course. But you know, what are we going to do? We can't wildcraft, and if the whole planet is interested in alternative healing and using these plants, we have to come up with some type of a methodology to produce these plants.
Yes.
So
well, that's why they in Tibet they say food actually is more important than herbs.
Than herbs.
Because you eat food three times a day, so the energetic quality of the food will go a longer way. So as you mentioned before, what kind of herbs would be good for cleansing, detoxing? They would basically, in Tibet, say you should eat more daikon in your diet, daikon radish.
Just eat more radish. Well, and radish, as we know, is one of the premier plants for the liver.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah, daikon radish. It's readily available.
Very available there, sure.
Yes, and just add it more frequently in your diet. That will help. And also it depends on the taste. If you have, continuing that line of thought, if you have a liver imbalance causing skin trouble, you also, therefore, would also want to avoid sour-tasting things because this would aggravate the liver. So that would mean you should avoid vinegar, pickles, lemons, things of a sour nature. And you also want to avoid things that are too hot, heating, such as whiskey or red wine. I remember very clearly, I had this one client who had psoriasis, and she did very, very well on a Chinese herb formula, but she didn't want to really change her diet much. So, you know, she had to basically live on these herbs to keep her psoriasis stable.
Because there's just so much heat
yes,
in psoriasis. Yeah.
Exactly. So I inquired further about her diet, and she said, oh, when I drink red wine, it just makes it much, much worse. So I told her, look, why do you want to just depend on these herbs? Just avoid the foods that are aggravating.
Yeah.
You know, every type of alcohol is different.
It's hard counseling patients, you know. It's a difficult thing counseling patients
mm-hmm.
when they're really...
She was Italian, and she says, oh, I can't give up my red wine, my Chianti, you know?
Well, then the thing is your treatment has to be dealing with the lifestyle counseling and finding why is she so attached to that. We know it's cultural, but what is she getting out of it that
yes.
she can't get somewhere else? And that's where medicine becomes quite the social science. Now, there's some other therapeutics. They do a brand of acupuncture there, and they also do a moxa. And I know they actually put the hot moxa right on the scalp and other types of other
yes,
places in the body.
That's correct.
And they also use gems. So in the last 10 minutes of the show, touch on some of those modalities and when would one apply them?
Basically, the most important treatment, physical modality, is the hot oil massage.
Tell us about why that's so important to get a massage like that.
Okay. It's so important because in our society, Rung has gone haywire with the majority of people. Again, Rung means wind.
We talked about that, the sort of having to be plugged in all the time and answer all the time, so the nervous system never is off guard, basically.
Yeah, too much emotional stress.
Right.
Grief, worry. These things just cause wreak havoc to that humor. The biggest therapeutic intervention, physical therapeutic intervention, is hot oil massage. And this is a specialty of Tibetan medicine.
Do they use medicated oils, Dr.
Yes,
Suhu?
Exactly.
So the herbs are infused.
Oil.
So the herbs are infused in the oil, and the herbs, I would assume, are prescribed by the doctor based on the patient's constitution and some of the conditions they have. And
yes, that's right. And what they do is they take this specially prepared oil that has herbs in it already. They warm it up, and then they dip a small sachet of herbs, okay? They dip it into that this little bag, into the warmed-up oil, and they proceed to stimulate the typical points that would be aggravated from excessive rung or rung imbalance. Now, most of these points are on the head. Top of the head, there's a few points. There's some on the sides of the head, and there are some on the back of the head, right behind the ear.
Mm.
And then you have a few other points on the spine itself. And this is pretty warm, the oil. It's quite warm. And the reason is when rung is imbalanced, often they say that when rung is imbalanced, these points open up like a window. And this opening allows even more wind to come inside the body and to cause the cold to get trapped. So when you're assessing the person for the rung disorder, you can actually palpate these points. And if these points on palpation are painful or they feel a little lumpy, or a little swollen, that means there's an imbalance there. That's an indication for this heat therapy. So you would apply these hot oil sachets onto these points to close up the window, so to speak. And then, following that, you would give a whole body massage following the acupuncture meridians of the Tibetan system.
So what happens if someone had trouble with their legs, say? I have a client that has trouble with her legs. Her legs are always, muscles are always tight. No matter how much she stretches, muscles are always tight along the bladder meridian, particularly, you know, those lines, those lines in the back there. And the muscles seem very almost grisly, almost fibrous from being, I don't know what, I'm trying to figure out the imbalance myself. I'm wondering how the Tibetan medicine would, the mind of this person is more, they're more of a go-getter, doer, certainly a wrong imbalance, that's for sure.
Well, what might happen is over time, the actual nerve channels can get blocked. Either because of repetitive movements, certain posture that you have to maintain for long periods of time, such as sitting in a desk, driving a car for long periods of time, or I don't know what this person's occupation is, but there might be a blockage in the nerve. So if you do this type of treatment, it's helpful. But because of the nerve blockage, it's better to give them herbs, Tibetan herbs, a patent, the appropriate patent formula to help free up the nerve blockage and make it looser. And then the physical therapy using the hot oil would be much more effective.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, you would need a combination, it sounds like, in this case.
Now, I know in the last few minutes they use different gems, and I know we'll have you on again, I think, to talk about gemstone therapy. I know that's something you've been immersing yourself into, and it's just so fascinating to me.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit, just briefly, a couple minutes, because we definitely want to everyone. Actually, right now, before we do that, why don't you just give out your website and how people can contact you, just so we don't rush it at the end of the program.
Okay. My website is www.drsuhu.com. That's drsuhu.com, drsuhu.com. And I can be reached at info@drsuhu.com. You can also call our office. It's 212-691-8281 or 516-759-5916.
Great. So that's Dr. Suhu, drsuhu.com. Great. Thank you for that, sharing that for us.
Sure.
Now, onwards with the gems in the last couple minutes of the program.
Okay. Well, let's start with the most basic one. Every woman, basically, in this country has a diamond.
Okay.
So, a diamond in the Tibetan system is used for bone trouble or teeth trouble.
Wow.
So, by wearing
wear
that...
Them? Just by wearing the diamond?
Just by wearing it, because it will... The frequency of that stone will cause a vibration in the aura to create a balance, and then this will have an internal reaction. Okay, so diamonds are good for bone trouble and teeth trouble. I think turquoise is quite popular too in this country, especially if you're from Arizona. There's tons of it there. Turquoise is one of the best ones to wear if you want to detoxify the liver.
Wow.
So if you have skin trouble, liver trouble, hepatitis, it'd be good for you to wear the turquoise. It does work better if the stone touches the skin, but it's not essential. Even if you just have it around your, or carrying it in your pocket, it will have some effects on your aura.
How about the emerald, the green, like a green energy? Does that have any healing power?
Emerald is for general rejuvenation, healing.
And that's interesting, because you think of green, it's you know, when you're stuck in the city and you want to be rejuvenated, people head out to the country. It's kind of interesting.
Yes. Yeah, emerald is very powerful. Has a good effect on the nerves also.
So that might be good to balance the nervous energy.
Yes.
What about pearl? Do they use pearls and other things? I guess they're really not really too many sea pearls in near Tibet, I would assume, so I don't know if that's used there.
Actually, they do use it.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, pearl is from the ocean, and therefore it's good for pekin or nerves. They consider the brain and the nerves under the control of pekin, the humor of pekin. So if you have any nerve trouble, memory trouble, insomnia, anything at all to do with nerves, you should wear a pearl.
Wow.
That will help bring balance in that.
I recommend that to some patients with insomnia and see how they do.
Yeah.
Well, we really enjoyed the program. In the last minute or so, why don't you just summarize and tell us a little bit about other things that you're doing. Like, you don't only do Tibetan medicine. I know you practice homeopathy and a lot of other energy healing.
Yes, so much. I think one time you had me on to discuss biosynteny.
Yeah.
I would love to update you again in the future on some of the latest findings I had with this energy medicine that comes from France.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I hear the music, which means we have to close the program, but that's just
okay.
The beginning. We'll have to get you on as soon as possible, Dr. Suhu.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, and God bless. And take care, everybody, for joining us on this edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z signing out for this edition. Stay healthy, folks. Take care.